You are listening to Podski Wee Wee, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, we got a lot of stuff to talk about today, so I think we just got to get right into it. We're going to start by talking about the game that happened in Edmonton. You were there. What was it like being there live?
Oh, it was a lot of fun. It's always a lot of fun going to Eskimos games, but when your team's there, it's a little bit more special. It was a really good game. It was really fun being in the stadium, and I met one of our biggest followers of the show, Mr. Adam Stalker, I believe his last name is, and he was a great guy. Him and his girlfriend were there, and we chatted it up about the podcast with the Tie Cats, and we watched the whole game together, so it was really cool meeting him.
That's pretty awesome. So you were recognized at the game. Did you guys plan to meet up beforehand, or was it like a spontaneous thing where all you hear is, "Hey, Mike"?
He sent me a tweet, I believe the night before, asking if I was going to the game. I had no idea that he was in Alberta. I guess he went to the Calgary game the week before. Sorry about that, bud. But yeah, he sent me a message, and we figured it out, met up before the game, and pretty much watched the whole game together.
So let's talk about this game a little bit. A lot better than last week, eh?
A lot better. A lot of good stuff happened in this game, but there was some bad as well.
So the Ticats fell again to the Edmonton Eskimos, this time by a score of 33-28. They are now 0-6 on the season. None of that is good. There's not a ton here for us to kind of celebrate, but because, as always, a loss is a loss. But this, to me, was a very fun game to watch, and it came down to the very last play of the game. And following that 60-1 loss to the Stamps a week ago, if you would have told me at the beginning of the week, the Ticats are going to take this to the final play of the game with a chance to win it, I'd have taken it. Edmonton is a damn good football team. They are 6-0 for a reason. And side note, I'm tired of seeing people online talk about how Edmonton's not very good. You don't get to 6-0 by accident, not in the CFL. Stop it. The Eskimos are a very, very good football team. And it's kind of heartening.
Oh, yeah. And with all those injuries, I mean, this team is not fully together yet, and they're 6-0. So, yeah, they haven't been playing, the best football in the world. But like you said, they're not 6-0 for no reason.
To know that the Ticats have played their two best games of the season against them is kind of something that I take out of these two that they've played in the last three, and especially this one. Like, they went on the road after getting hammered. Everyone was down. It felt like they hit rock bottom, and then they make a game of this. And no moral victories in professional sports. And if you saw Zach Calero's interview after the game, he was not at all happy. But you see a performance like this, you see the team make plays and rally around each other and go into the house of an undefeated team and really almost come so close to stealing the game. I feel like that win that we're waiting for, I think it's coming, Mike, and I think it's coming pretty soon.
I think it's coming pretty soon, too. Hopefully next week we got to start winning at some point. And if, it doesn't happen soon, the season's done.
So offensively, Mike, what did you see in this game that you liked, disliked? What do you want to talk about?
I liked Zach Kolaris' performance. He was under pressure a lot in this game. He was sacked 4 times, I believe. But he managed to have a really good performance. He was 24-35. 282 yards and 3 touchdowns, 1 pick. It was just nice to see Zach play like Zach. It wasn't his best performance ever, but it was a good performance, and I'll take that this season so far.
Yeah, it felt like this was the first time we really saw Zach Kolaris look like Zach Kolaris, capital letters Zach Kolaris, that we probably haven't seen since maybe last Labor Day, I would say. when he had his last really big Zach Collaros game. So again, like I said earlier, if you saw the interview with him after the game, you can tell he's pissed off, not at all happy about his performance, about the team performance, about any of that. He's just we got to win, we got to win, we got to win. He is an unhappy camper. But I see this, and I think this feels like a game that maybe he can kind of build off of, and maybe this is the game he needed to kind of get him back to being that player we saw a couple years ago.
I'm really hoping so, and not much to say about the rushing game, though. I mean, C.J. Gable only had 3 carries, but what?
But they did it again where they ran early, and they involved him early, yeah. And then they completely got away from it. And the thing I don't think I will ever understand is it was working, and the score was at any point the score really out of hand. They were down. I think the most they were down by at one point was 12. They were never out of this game. They never had to abandon the run, and yet, like you said, Gable had 3 carries. I don't think they had a run from the first quarter until when Zach Collaros did the, and I mean like designed run, not a scramble or whatever, anything like that. And they had the quarterback draw, which I think was in the third quarter, maybe even in the fourth quarter. I just don't understand why this team gets away from it. They have a guy like Gable, and when they don't use Gable, they have Shoreman, and they both, when they get the ball, they produce, and yet they don't give them the ball, and I just makes no sense to me.
No, it doesn't make any sense. Jalen Saunders had 1 carry for 11 yards. I don't recall that play.
Oh, yes, it was on a jet sweep. I do remember that. I don't remember when it happened, but I do remember it.
Yeah, but, I mean, Gable, 3 touches for 28 yards. That's a 9.3-yard average.
That's almost a first down every time he touched the ball.
Yeah, and they just completely forgot about him again. But let's move on from that because, you know, we've been talking about this for years now, Josh. Years.
Yeah, I think from
the receiving core.
Day one, we've been talking about this in the football. So it's beating a dead horse at this point.
Now, a good thing was the receivers. They looked new guys that haven't stepped up big time in this game, especially the Altman kid. First game for him, 3 receptions, 74 yards, including a touchdown catch for 44 yards. Brian Timms finally breaks out of his shell, has 6 catches for 67 yards. Jalen Saunders with a beautiful touchdown catch that brought them close with about 2 minutes left, I believe, in the game. So these guys that we were kind of worried about, like who were these guys, had a really good game, and it's nice to see.
Did you notice, I'm sure you did, because we've talked about this before with Zach Collaros, the Altman touchdown was a bomb to the wide side of the field. It was a beautiful throw. It was well defended by the Eskimos, and it was a great catch. And when I was watching the game, I was in my living room, and it was probably close to 10 o'clock at night over here. And I jumped out and said, "Oh, he caught a touchdown!" Like I was that shocked by it. And I don't know if that says something about what I think of the Ticats this year, but you're right. The kids stepped up. Timms had a great catch in the middle of the field at one point in the game, late in the game. Tasker was his ever reliable self. I believe he caught did he catch a touchdown and a 2-point convert?
No touchdown, it says in the stats. It might have just been the 2 points.
Okay, well, yes, it was. You're right. It was 2 points. Brandon Banks had the other touchdown. That's who I'm thinking of. When Collaros made that nice move where Ladler came at him and he kind of like faked him out and threw a rocket to Banks. But everyone kind of played a role and stepped up. And it shows you that, yes, these guys aren't household names, maybe never will be, but they're the guys that are on the field right now, and they're being rather dependable. Timms especially, we called him out last week. I think we have to praise him this week. He was very reliable, made a lot of catches. He was a guy that I thought stood out, but the Saunders catch, oh my God, that kid, every time it seems like the ball's near him, he's bringing it in. He's made some beautiful catches. He's a guy who, if he's eligible, I'm not sure if he is, looks to be the Ticats Rookie of the Year right now.
Yeah, you have to. I don't really think of anyone else that really stands out. So yeah, you got to think it's him. And I like, you were shocked by the Altman catch. I was shocked by that Saunders catch. It took me like a couple seconds until I stood up and was like, "Wow, we caught that!" And then I started clapping. So I mean, that was just beautiful catch in the end zone. And Saunders has stepping up game after game, and he keeps upping his game. So hopefully, it's just better things from him to come.
Yeah, for sure. We got to talk about the offensive line, though, don't we?
Zach was running for his life once again, and he managed to, like I said earlier, he managed to pull out a very good performance, even though his offensive line was just not good at all.
No, there were very few times where I felt like he wasn't under pressure. The Saunders touchdown throw was actually one of the rare times when he was able to stand in the pocket and see his receiver and throw a strike. Every other time he was, especially like that late in the game when they get the ball back with like 42 seconds left, I think it was, and he was rolling out every single time. And man, it's at some point that we're going to talk a little bit later about Ticats bringing in some reinforcements on the offensive line. But man, week in, week out, almost like the running game, we're talking about how this offensive line is underperforming.
Yeah, it seems the same thing over and over again. Offensive line, running game, secondary. It's just, that's what's really hurting this team. And I don't know. I'm hoping with, like you said, the person that we brought in hopefully helps out on the offensive line. I'm not sure about the secondary, but maybe with the changes they made, there might be, a switch for the better, but we'll have to see.
Let's switch over to the defensive side of the ball, and there isn't a ton to be happy about from this defense this week. They gave up 448 yards of offense, including 317 in the air to Mike Riley. They let Ladarius Perkins, in his first career start, run for 105 yards. Exactly. The Eskimos' third string running back, Mike.
Yep.
And this goes back to the thing you said earlier about they're plugging and playing. Guys are getting hurt. John White's gone. Then Trayvon Vann's gone. Then they have this guy. Talk about a hell of a recruiting staff they have there in Edmonton. We were complaining last week about the Ticats not finding talent. They have found some. We discussed those receivers, but the Eskimos just keep plugging and playing and finding guys to play. And that, to me, that's a testament to not just Brock Sunderland, who's there now, but to the GM he took over for, Ed Hervey. Ed Hervey obviously had an eye for talent. So again, these guys are carved up the Ticats defense. The line and the defense in general barely got any pressure on Mike Riley, just five pressures all game. They recorded the one sack that was John Chicks on that crazy fumble that resulted in Edmonton having a 3rd and 42. So it was a tough day for the defense.
Well, yeah, a lot of missed opportunities. You know, if they recover that fumble, they're right on the doorstep, and they were 8 points behind. If they score a touchdown there, it could be a different game. But you know, if and buts were candy nuts, whatever. But yeah, it wasn't a very impressive performance by the defense. They got ran over, and through the air they got torched. So I mean, do you notice that Big Teddy? It's either like three sacks, a huge game, or nothing. Do you notice that?
Yeah, kind of. I would chalk that up to him being an interior defensive lineman.
Right.
And
right.
I just feel like he's not going. There's either going to be games where he's found the weak spot and he exploits it, or because he's a lineman, they don't have as much impact. The guy that I'm really not worried about, but kind of disappointed with this year so far, has been John Chick. Yeah, I just mentioned he had the one sack, but he's kind of been invisible this year. And we talked about it when he signed last year, and I said, I don't know if this guy's over the hill, and he came out and he had a great season. And there's still 12 games ahead, so there's still a possibility that he could put up some huge numbers and get back to the player we know he is. But he's 34, pushing 35. Like, it's starting to feel like maybe we got his last good year out of him last year, and this year now we're starting to see that decline.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, that's getting up there. For a football player in general and a defensive lineman, 34, 35 years old, you're right. He could have, you know, reached the top of the mountain, and now he's on the downside this year, but kind of still early. So maybe he can bring up those stats and bring the pressure on the quarterback, and we'll see a different John Chick. But that's the only thing you can hope for, right? Because this guy is one of our key defensive players. If he's not producing, then, there's going to be you're going to see other parts of the defense suffer. So I'm hoping he can step up his game.
You brought up the near misses that this team had, and you singled out the fumble recovery. You're absolutely right. If they would have scooped that up, they're inside the Edmonton's 15-yard line. Instead, I believe Hazelton picked up the fumble, and the Eskimos punted, and the Ticats get the ball a little inside of Edmonton on Edmonton's half. But they go two and out, and they settle for a 47-yard field goal. Imagine if they had the ball in the 15. They have a chance still to get a first down, but they have a couple cracks to get into the end zone. Like, it could have been a whole different game. There were a couple of interceptions that they could have had. Three by my count. One was less of a near miss and more of just a it's one of those things. The ball got tipped in the air. You saw two Ticats dive at it. Dominique Ellis was one of them. Richard Leonard may have been the other. But it's one of those things where good teams seem to have those breaks fall their way. We saw Justin Rogers nearly make an interception, and it seems to be that's a weekly thing with this kid, is that every week he's almost making an interception. It's like he must have three or four missed INTs already this season. Richard Leonard nearly had an interception. It would have been a tough catch. He was falling down. I believe he even got an offensive pass interference call in the play, although I could be wrong. And he was falling down, and he nearly caught the ball. But that's a tough catch for even a receiver to make, let alone a defensive back. But again, sort of these sort of momentum-shifting plays, the teams that win ball games get these to go in their favor. The teams that lose ball games get the near misses, and a lot of near misses for the Ticats in this one.
Yeah, and who got injured in the secondary? Because they were shuffling around again.
Will Hill. Will Hill, who was starting at safety in this game, he got hurt. He came out. Courtney Stephen ended up going to safety.
The corner, didn't he?
And then I think at one point he ends up going to corner. Then I think he went back to safety. I'm trying to think of who the other guy is that might have got nicked up. It might have been Unamba, the new guy that they had starting for the first time. I think he got hurt at one point, but I don't think he was out for very long. And then when he came back in, I think they shuffled Courtney Stephen back to safety. But yeah, just Will Hill's a guy who's had a pretty good season, and he got hurt in this game and didn't come back. So that's a blow to the team too.
Yeah, it's a never-ending list of injuries with this team. Like, even the new players come in and they get injured. It's just, I don't know how to explain it. It's just really frustrating. You can't get any continuity when everybody's dropping like flies. But once again, Edmonton seems to do it, so I don't know. I don't know what to say.
Yeah, so we'll talk about the secondary. Before I get into the one real positive thing I have in this game, we got to talk about the secondary. Team made a ton of changes again. I just mentioned Will Hill came in at safety. Don Unamba, who was brought in, played at corners. Dominique Ellis was brought in to play Sam. They went against a receiving core that was missing Adarius Bowman and Duke Williams at the start of the game, and then saw Brandon Zylstra leave the game midway through the second quarter. And then all of a sudden, this guy who most people haven't heard of, Bryant Mitchell, goes off for over 100 yards receiving, which is another 100-yard-plus receiving game that the Ticats have given up. And they just continue to not be able to stop anyone through the air. I mentioned 317 yards for Mike Riley. In the six games they've played, they've allowed 506 yards to Ricky Ray, 380 to Kevin Glenn, 436 to Travis Lule, 350 and 317 to Mike Riley. And the only quarterback not to throw for 300-plus against them was Bo Levi Mitchell, but that's only because he played a half. So, yeah. But if you add the numbers that him and Andrew Buckley put together, you get 303 yards. So the Cats probably would have allowed 300 yards passing to Mitchell in that game as well. And that's every single game this season. The Ticats have allowed over 300 yards through the air. There's a big reason why they're 0-6.
Yep, I think they're averaging, you know, over 400 yards total yards against. It's just so easy for other teams to pick apart this defense. That, I mean, and the offense has been bad too, but I mean, they've both been bad. They've just been a bad team so far this year. And but the passing through the air, just so easily, is the one that concerns me the most, because I think the offense could turn it around, but I'm worried about that secondary.
Yeah, again, this is one of those things that we talk about. We've probably been talking about this for 2 years now. Secondary is an issue, and they still haven't cleaned it up. They're missing players in the secondary, but again, we can't use injuries as an excuse, because you look at a team like Edmonton, who's got, what, something like 17, 18 starters? Guys who started the season as their starters on the injured list? Like, that's incredible, and they just keep plugging away. They keep finding ways to win, and if the Ticats could do that, they would have a victory already. Maybe a couple victories, but they just don't, and I don't know. I don't know what the fix of the secondary is, because it seems to not matter who they put in there or when they put them in. It's the same results every single time.
Maybe a little bit more press coverage, you know, not floating back so far, like the DB standing 10 yards away from the receivers, and, you know, maybe get up there and give them a little bump. I have no idea.
No, I hate that stuff. A couple games ago, I think it was the first Edmonton game that they played here in Hamilton, and it was just every single time you see them, they're 9-10 yards off the ball, and it's like, and they're backpedaling out of that. So now you're giving them almost 15 yards. That's pitch and catch for a quarterback like Mike Riley. That's pitch and catch for any quarterback in this league. And you give them that cushion. I understand giving them that cushion maybe on the wide side, because that's a long throw to make, gives you a chance to really make a break on the ball. But those guys that are playing close, like on that close side, get in their face and make them earn those yards, earn that break. If you get beat, you get beat. But at least you're not giving him 8 yards every catch.
Yeah, get up there and stuff him. I mean, you can hit him within 5 yards. So let's start taking advantage of that, because the 10 yards off the ball just is not working. It's just way too easy for every team to just pick apart our defense.
So in the interest of not being completely negative, I did want to single out one area where I think the Ticats defense played well, and that was in short yardage. I really think that the short yardage unit for this team played exceptionally well. They stuffed the Esks on a key 3rd-and-1 with 42 seconds left in the game, and it was the opportunity that gave the offense a chance around midfield to win this football game. Yes, they still lost, but in a situation like that, that's really all you can ask of your defense, is to make a play, which they hadn't done all year. When the Ticats had a chance to make a play on defense to give their offense a chance to win the game or steal the game, it hasn't happened. We finally saw that in this one. They made a great stop. Yes, the Ticats offense couldn't capitalize on it, but they gave the team a chance to win, and that's what you can ask for in that situation. And there was also a stuff on Mike Riley. What I thought, at least, was a stuff on Mike Riley's first touchdown plunge. The replays, again, you're at the game, so it's hard to tell. I understand that. But watching the game on television, did not look like Mike Riley broke the plane of the goal line with the ball from the replays that TSN showed. And it was really weird to me when the referee on the opposite side of the field, who could not see the ball, signaled for touchdown. So I was a little bit confused, but they called for it, and they said it was a touchdown. They review every scoring play, as we know, but they really made the Esks earn that first score. And I felt like on 3rd down or 2nd-and-1, 2nd-and-inches, 3rd-and-inches, they really made the Eskimos earn those yards. So for that, I got to tip my hat to the short yardage unit. I thought they played really, really well.
Yeah, that third and one gamble was huge. They stepped up. They made a play when they had to. They, like you said, they gave the offense an opportunity. They gave the team an opportunity to win this game, and we just fell short. But yeah, I honestly did not think that they were going to be able to make that stop, and they stopped them by quite a bit. So great surge by the defensive line and the linebackers getting in there to stop the running back who tried to leap over the pile. It was great to see that.
So special teams-wise, we got to talk about Sergio Castillo missing his first field goal of the year, because in the grand scheme of this game, it kind of played a huge role. The team lost by 5, so had he hit that field goal, and I know it was way early in the game. I think it was his first field goal attempt of the game, actually, maybe in the first or second quarter. So it was way early, but had he hit that, the Ticats are probably down 2, not 5, with 42 seconds left, and they're driving for that game-winning field goal and not a touchdown. I'm not at all pinning this loss on Castillo, but it does suck that his first miss, which we both know and everyone knows is inevitable, he was not going to go perfect for the season, kind of played a rather large role in the Ticats being unable to get that first win.
Yeah, it was his first field goal attempt. Of, you know, not an easy one from 47 yards. It does suck that he missed that, because as soon as the Ticats, and maybe it would have been different, maybe they wouldn't have gone for it on 3rd-and-1 if they were down. If they were only up by 2 at that point. So maybe they punt the ball and they get the Ticats pin within the 10 or whatever. But you're right. If he makes that, it would have been a little bit of a different ending, probably.
Well, and if he makes that, then when Zach Caleros throws that interception later in the game, they're down, maybe they kick a field goal there because the score is different.
Right.
And then, of course, like this is just it. One play does not dictate the outcome of a game by any stretch of the imagination. So that's why I said I'm not blaming the loss on Castillo. He missed a kick in the second quarter or the first quarter, whenever it was. And when you look at the total of the game, it's like, oh man, if you would have hit that. But you're right. A ton of things would have changed. Edmonton would have got the Edmonton scrimmages from the 35 instead of the Ticats kicking off. And you're right. On that 3rd-down gamble, the Eskimos took, maybe they do punt the ball. Like, you never know how one play will change the entire game. It's just when you look at it at the end of the game, you go, oh, those 3 points would have really helped.
Yeah, for sure. What did you think about the call to go for it on 3rd-and-3 or 3rd-and-goal or whatever it was?
No, I liked it. You know what? You got to be aggressive. You get down that close, I think you got to go for it.
Yeah, and you're down by 12. Field goal doesn't get it within one score or so. Yeah, I like the call as well. Just couldn't execute.
Yeah, well, I'm always in favor of playing to win. And yes, it didn't work out. But you're right. 3 points in that situation would have done absolutely nothing. So it's kind of a controversy if you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, for sure.
Brandon Banks, though, had a couple good returns in this game. So it was kind of nice. There was one in particular I tweeted out. I was like, oh my God, the defense gets a stop and Brandon Banks makes a good return. Like, should I get my hopes up? And I thought he played pretty well in this game as a return man.
Yeah, he had a kickoff return average of 26.5, which isn't terrible. You know, he had four punt returns for 61 yards. 51-yard average is long. Probably the one that you're talking about was the long. It was 28 yards. So, yeah, I'm seeing some things from him in the return game that make me a little bit optimistic.
Yeah, he seems to be getting a little more comfortable there. Maybe the blocking units are getting a little better with a little more experience. And he's due to break one. Like, I know he's not the guy he was a couple years ago, but he's still pretty dangerous back there. So he is due to break one. And I think hopefully it comes this week against Winnipeg and he could do it at home and the crowd can go ape when he does it, because that would be pretty cool.
Yeah, because that, you know, if he does that at home, the crowd's going to go nuts and it will be some momentum. Some momentum for the Ticats, you know, getting that crowd behind them. So I'm hoping as much as you are that he bring ones back. Bring one back. Okay. cut. Again, do it over. I'm hoping he brings one back next week against Winnipeg.
Little tongue-tied this week. Had a few too many, still working off the hangover from the game.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you get into your 30s and it takes like a week to, you know, work off a hangover, but I'm all right. I'm good, Josh. I'm good.
Okay, so coverage units. They gave up the one big return to Edwards, the 51 yards on the punt. But outside of that, they only gave up 7 yards per punt return. So, yeah, a team breaks a big one, and you're like, oh, the coverage units suck. But if you dig deep into the stats, they outside of that, they were pretty darn good.
But that one really stung. I think we're within five at that point and really took away some of their gusto that they had going. You know, they got down to about the – you know, around the 20-yard line. I'm not sure exactly where, but yeah, that for the whole game, it was pretty good, but that one really stung.
Yeah, that one definitely hurt, because I believe the Eskimos converted it into a touchdown. So it was, again, like I said, there's good to take from this game in every aspect, but there's those little things where it just, the good teams, like with the turnovers, the good teams make these plays and the bad teams don't.
Yeah, that sums it up perfectly.
It's my turn this week to pick a glorious player of the week, and you mentioned him already. I am going with Zach Kolaros. I understand he had that one bad interception, but like I said earlier, this is the first time that Zach has looked like Zach since Labor Day. Completed nearly 69% of his passes, threw for 282 yards and 3 touchdowns, and despite running for his life very many times throughout this game, he looked about as confident as I've seen him pretty much all year. I mentioned he was unhappy at the end of the game. If you don't know what I'm talking about and haven't seen the video, go to 3 Down Nation, check it out. He's a very, very angry man in that one. But I believe that this was the type of game, like I said earlier, that can kind of maybe springboard him and this offense into better things. So for a game where Zach Kolaros finally looked like Zach Kolaros, he is my glorious player of the week for this week.
Yeah, that would have been my pick as well. He just seemed like he got his confidence back in this game, and he just, you know, he said, the hell with it. I'm going to be pressured all game, but I'm not going to be worried about it. I'm just going to try my best to do my thing, and that's what he did.
So now we got to get into some news, and there's hirings, there's firings, and there's new players coming in. So let's talk about the freshest news, the biggest news. Jeff Reinbold is out as defensive coordinator and linebacker coach. Philip Lawley will take over for the remainder of the season. I think we need a disclaimer here. We both like Jeff very, very much. We had a great chat with him a little over a year ago on this very show. He's a good guy, and we can't stress that enough. But if you look at the performance of this defense, and we talked about it in this game, it's hard to say that this move isn't justified, Mike. Hamilton is last in points allowed per game. They're allowing 39 points a game. They're last in yards allowed at 460.8 per game. They're last in yards per play at 7.5. And they're last in first downs allowed with 168. If you go and get the stats from the team stats, they are pretty much dead last in every major statistical category. And that's recipe for a justifiable firing, in my opinion.
Yeah, I kind of, you know, I thought in the back of my mind that maybe Reinbold would be out before anyone else just because of the, you know, the reasons you just listed. This is a historically bad defensive team right now. It's just, I mean, we think back to the Casey Crehan-led defensive squad in 2012, and we thought they were bad. Well, this squad is blowing them out of the water. It's not even really close. I mean, to be last in almost every single category defensively is someone's head had to roll, and unfortunately, it had to be Jeff. And like you said, Jeff was from the one time I've talked to him, he seemed like, you know, one of the nicest people you could ever chat with, and really nice guy. But that's just football, and he's out, and hopefully someone can come in and maybe change the schemes around to make this defense a lot better, because they need to be a lot better.
Yeah, I see him before games, both games I've attended on the road, and games obviously at Tim Hortons Field, where he's tossing the football to fans in the stands and playing catch with them. Like, he gets it. He gets it probably better than almost anyone else, what the fans of this league and the interaction with them, what that means and why it's so important. But this is a performance-based business, and the defense just was not good enough. They're on pace to give up over 700 points this year. That's damn near a CFL record, and if you're giving up 700 points, you're not going to win very many football games. Like, a change had to be made. I don't know if a change necessarily is going to do anything for this year, and I feel bad that he took this promotion in the offseason. Maybe he should have stayed as special teams coordinator, and he'd still have a job, and they should have found someone else to take over for him. Like, I do feel bad. He was kind of put in a no-win situation. He was a defensive coordinator a few years ago in Montreal, and they weren't very good. So this was kind of expected, but it stings personally, because like we said, we've had a chance to talk with him. I've seen him out and about during game days. Like, he is a genuinely nice human being, and it sucks when people like that go. But like I said, performance-based business, and his unit just hasn't been performing. Now, to be fair, neither is the offense. They're also last in pretty much every category. Points for, net offense, yards per play, first down, time possession. Like, they're dead last in all those. So the offense has been a problem too, but the offense is essentially run by the head coach, who's also the VP of football operations. And, yeah, maybe Reinbold's a little bit of a scapegoat here, but it's not entirely unjustified that he was let go.
No, not at all. It just, you know, the stats bear it out. The stats show the truth, and this defense is no good. They were no good. They haven't been good since week one. So, yeah, I agree that maybe he's a bit of a scapegoat, but it was also justified, like you said.
If I'm TSN, though, I've already put my phone call into him to get him on the panel to do those coaches' playbook segments that they used to do with Paul Lapolice, because those things were fantastic. And I don't know if you've heard the Henry Burris playbook ones this year. They are awful. Henry Burris sounds like – and look, we're going to talk about Henry Burris in a little bit, and we have our problems with Henry Burris, but there's one thing you can't say about him. It's not that he's not at a loss for words. The man is eloquent as a speaker, but man, oh man, do those things make him sound like a robot. If I'm TSN, I've already called. Yes. Jeff Reinbold has a place in Hamilton, so he's not that far from Toronto. I put a call into him, and I get him on that panel doing those coaches' playbook segments this weekend.
Yeah, it is rather dull, those Burris segments. It's like he almost puts you to sleep with the tone of his voice. But you're right with Reinbold, and he has experience, you know, overseas on Sky Sports doing NFL stuff. So the guy has experience in front of the camera, and I think he'd be a great addition to the TSN team, which doesn't have that many defensive players. I mean, Schultz was there, but I haven't seen him in months. So an addition of a, you know, defensive mind would help out the panel, I'd say.
Well, and someone who is very like, he's a personality, is what I would say.
And Schultz was an offensive lineman anyways, so what the hell?
Oh,
am I
yeah, you're right. I didn't even catch that. But like, Reinbold's a personality. He brings an enthusiasm and excitement. I find that outside of maybe Matt Dunnigan and Rod Smith a little bit, I find that the panel's a little bit dry, to be honest with you. You add someone in like Reinbold who knows Dunnigan. I'm pretty sure Reinbold coached on teams that Dunnigan played on. I could be wrong. Definitely knows Milt Stegall, coached the Winnipeg Blue Bombers when Stegall was there. He's got some experience with these guys, and he's so relentlessly positive. I think he would be a great, great addition to the panel, and who knows, maybe he doesn't want to do that, but you said he does have that experience over with in the UK with his NFL stuff, so I think he'd be great at it.
Yep, make it happen, TSN.
Okay, so Reinbold's out, But June Jones is in. They hired him late last week as assistant head coach. Now, I know a lot about June Jones. He's a name that I remember from my childhood when he was the coach of the Atlanta Falcons. But he has 30-plus years of coaching experience. He was the head coach with the Atlanta Falcons for a few seasons. He was the interim head coach for the San Diego Chargers. He was head coach for a couple of NCAA teams, the SMU Mustangs. And probably most famously, most people probably know him as the head coach of the University of Hawaii. He has some CFL experience. He played quarterback for the Argos in 1982, something I did not know. And he spent the 1986 season as the offensive coordinator for the Ottawa Rough Riders. So this to me is interesting. June Jones is known as sort of the patriarch of the run-and-shoot offense, which put up a lot of passing yards for those teams in Hawaii. He tried to put up a lot of passing yards in the NFL. It didn't work at that time. But Warren Moon with the Houston Oilers ran a version of the run-and-shoot. So it's an offense that is a little older, but, you know, what's old is new again. And he's a great offensive mind, and his role is really yet to be defined. Assistant head coach is what he's being hired as. So I think this is a pretty interesting hiring.
Yeah, I wasn't as familiar with him as you were, but I did look at his resume, and as you just listed off, it's pretty impressive. So I'm hoping he can come in, and I'm assuming he's going to be calling the plays eventually. I don't know what this means for Steph Potasik, but you know, it can't be a good thing for him. But yeah, I hope he can bring all that knowledge and really help out Claros and Ken Austin and the whole team. You know, put together an impressive offensive unit. I'm hoping. That's what I'm hoping. So let's just see how it works out. I know that he was at the game in Edmonton, but he wasn't really officially coaching or anything during that game, I don't believe. So next week will be his, you know, he'll have a full week of practice, and we can see some results in the game against Winnipeg.
Here's where I'll tell you it is a good thing for Potasik. Maybe not for his immediate job security as offensive coordinator, but he gets a chance to learn from a guy that knows offensive football better than almost anyone out there. Like, this is a guy who he's not Bill Walsh, but he kind of created his own offense. He had success with it, especially at the collegiate level with a lot of guys who would find their way to the CFL. He coached Solomon Elamimian and he coached Chad Owens. So these are guys who came to the CFL, had the skill set to thrive up here. It might not be – like, at some point, perhaps Jones does take over as the offensive coordinator, does take over play calling, does all that. But Stefan Potasik's career might not last long with the Ticats, but he can learn a lot from June Jones. So I think in that aspect, it's a good move for him.
This is true. That's a good point. And you mentioned Chad Owens. I was thinking about it the other week. I was like, man, be nice to have him come into the lineup right now. You know what I mean? A little bit of experience. It would have been nice if we would have, you know, held on to him. But you can't change the past. So, oh well.
Yeah, and well, has he even played for Saskatchewan yet? Have you seen his hair?
His hair, yeah. I saw it earlier in the season. I haven't seen it. It was pretty. I remember being like, oh, Jesus, what is that?
It's awful. Oh, I saw him on the sidelines. I think it was the Riders game against the Argos. I think he was talking to Daron Carter. And I saw the dreads, and it's like, what the hell is this? It was terrible. Absolutely terrible.
Yeah, I don't think he hasn't suited up. I think he's cleared to play now, though. So we'll see what they do with him. I know that they were planning on just using him as a returner, but I don't know. They've got a lot of talent in the receiving corps, I guess, so maybe they will just keep him on returns.
Okay, enough about Chad Owens. Let's talk about players coming to the Ticats. Speaking of veteran presence, it's not official yet, as far as I know. I will check Twitter to make sure. But it looks as if Tony Washington, formerly of the Edmonton Eskimos, is going to be signing with the Hamilton Tiger Cats. He sent out a tweet. He was released by the Eskimos earlier today, as we record on Monday. And maybe about an hour later, he sent out a tweet via his Twitter account that just said, hashtag OskiWeeWee with a tiger emoji. I think that's pretty definitive that he's going to be heading to Hamilton.
Yeah, you'd have to think so. And they were pretty quick on this. As soon as he was let go, I didn't see the tweet or thing. I got home, I saw his release, and I was like, yeah, maybe the Ticats will bring him in. And they were right on top of it, apparently. So I think if he is coming in, I think it's a great move to solidify those tackle spots with Xavier Fulton and Tony Washington.
Yeah, so I don't see anything official yet via anyone, but I think it's I think it's pretty safe to say that he'll be with the Hamilton Tiger Cats very, very soon. He also sent out a tweet that said, let me find it. I don't want to get him. I don't want to say anything inappropriate. He sent out a tweet with a video link of Chris Jericho doing the "You just made the list" gag, and says 0-6 means nothing when you're on an East Coast swing. East Coast, guess what? You just made the list. So 0-16. There's only one of those in the CFL. And his new Twitter banner. You know how you have the Twitter profile picture and you have like the banner behind it. I'm on his Twitter page. It's a Ticats logo. So unless he's trolling everyone, I think it's safe to say Tony Washington is going to be the newest member of the Hamilton Tiger Cats.
Yeah, and I believe he was the starting left tackle for the Eskimos in the last game. So interesting release. I guess they're going to have a lot of faith in Joel Figueroa. I know that he was injured. He's on the one-game injured list. But, yeah, I believe Tony Washington was the starting left tackle for the Eskimos in their Grey Cup year. He is – many starts with the team at left tackle. So this guy brings in a ton of experience, and that's what we need. When Fulton's healthy, he's a good tackle. But when you have two rookie CFL tackles playing, it's really tough to keep Zach off his ass.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. It's you want some veterans on the offensive line, especially at those tackle positions, in order to keep your quarterback upright. And Washington's kind of versatile. He's played both the left and right side for the Eskimos. I think he's a little better suited to the left side, so that'll be interesting when Fulton comes back. Maybe they move Fulton to the right, or who knows. But hey, at this point, there's no like kind of wrong answer here. They're kicking the tires here. They're going to bring him in. He doesn't work out, you let him go. And you go back to one of the youngsters. But I like the move. I think he played really well over the years for the Eskimos. I know he would also spend time with Calgary. I think he won two great cups. I think he won a cup in Toronto in 2012, and then he won one, obviously, with the Eskimos a couple years ago. So I think he's a good player. I think this is a good signing by the team, and it can only help, because if he's just as bad or worse than the guys that are already here, then it's you let him go, and it's no loss, right?
Yeah, and the guy's a monster. He's 6'7", 320 pounds. I mean, this guy can push some people around. And let's not forget about his time with the Dallas Vigilantes or the Allen Wranglers. I mean, whew, what years he had with them. I mean, I remember watching him, and he was just spectacular.
Oh, I'm sure you have film on him. You've broken it down, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, Ticats news is over. Let's jump to some CFL news. The first, the big one, the CFL changed their rules on challenges, and I'm going to let you take it from here, Mike, because you're apparently Nostradamus, or you're actually the commissioner in disguise, because how did the challenge rules change?
Well, one a team. That's what I said. You know, I just threw it out there last week. You know, just cut it down to one a team, and the flow will be better, and they must have been listening, Josh, because that's exactly what they did, and I think it's a great move. I think that's all the games that have been played since that rule change have had some spectacular, you know, the games go by so much quicker. There's no challenging of challenges and all this craziness. I think it was a great move, and it can be adjusted in the off season, but doing this right now, you know, not even mid season, just making a little tweak, I think has done a lot for the game just in the week or so that's been implemented.
It's not a full fix of the problems that I have with replay and challenges, but it's a step. And it shows me that the league is not afraid to make a change when they think things aren't going right. We're getting two challenges maximum a game. I still don't like the idea that a coach can challenge a play, get it right, because the ref screws something up, and then they kind of lose that challenge. But for the time being, this works for me. And I said it last week when we were talking about challenges, watching old games. Yeah, there were some missed calls and all the other sorts of stuff. But years later, you don't remember them. Unless they're really, really blatant, you don't remember the calls that they got wrong. And at the end of the day, these are like the commissioner came out and said, I want the athletes on the field, the elite athletes in this league, deciding the outcomes of the game, not the officials. To me, that's exactly what I'm looking for. I want the players to play. I want the refs to ref. Human error is going to happen, and in 6 weeks when people are like, they're getting calls wrong, I don't want to hear it. I'd rather it be this way. Replay has a role in sports. I think we just haven't found the perfect role for it yet. I think people expect it to be the fix-all. To every mistake that's made, replay will fix it. I don't think that's its purpose. I think, like the league has been fond of saying, you want to get the egregious missed calls right, and I agree with that. You want to make sure touchdowns count when they're touchdowns. You want to make sure turnovers count when they're turnovers. Catches are catches. Stuff like that. Ticky-tacky things like illegal contact away from the play and crap like that, I'm not that concerned with anymore. They tried it. Kudos to the CFL for trying something new when they brought in all these things to challenge. But also kudos to them now for saying, look, we tried it. It's not working as intended. We're going to make some changes. This is the first change. I think there's going to be a massive overhaul to the challenge and replay system come the off season. And to me, I think the CFL should be applauded for taking the step forward to add things to replay and for realizing that's not working and trying to take them back. I think there's no negatives here that I think you can trash the league on. I think they did a good job all the way around.
Yeah, the commissioner listened to the fans. He was at games, been to a ton of games, and especially that game, Edmonton, BC, well, there was like four challenges in the fourth or something crazy like that. Challenges of challenges and just nonsense. He saw that. He knew that the fans were upset about it. He saw it himself. He probably thought, this is ruining a great game that was being played. So big ups to the new commissioner. I think that he's done a great job since he's come in. And, it's not a total fix, but I do like the change. There's still automatic reviews of touchdowns and turnovers, which I think should be done. And they get one challenge each. And I was for all these challenges when they were coming in. I was like, yeah, let's get it right. But after a couple years, I'm just happy to go back to kind of the way it was. And the refs are going to make mistakes, but we're just going to have to deal with it because it makes it so much better without all these challenges. The flow is just amazing. This is the CFL that we grew up with. It's tremendous.
Now we get to talk about a couple of show favorites. We're going to start with Ricky Foley. Zero Dark 3095, or whatever that stupid thing he said 5 months ago, has come true. He is now a member of the BC Lions. I'm just glad he's not a member of the Hamilton Tiger Cats.
Yeah, that would make me sick to my stomach. Even way more so than the Chad Owens signing last year. It's interesting that they're bringing him in. I'm sure it's not going to hurt the team, but BC kind of makes me scratch my head a bit because of their past and what happened years ago. But I guess that's all in the past, and Wally Bono's throwing that under the rug. And we shall see if the guy can still play, because his last couple years, it kind of, his productivity was dropping off.
I saw a tweet. I want to say it was from Brian from the BC Lions Den podcast, who said, yeah, this is all water under the bridge, but wouldn't it be funny if Foley showed up for practice first day this week and Wally Buono was like, gotcha, we're not signing yet. That made me laugh because, yeah, I think everyone remembers Ricky Foley saying, after I believe trying out with the Seattle Seahawks, said he was going to re-sign with the Lions, and then it was announced in the press, essentially. I think he did a radio interview saying he was coming back, and then at the last minute decided to change his mind, sign with the Argos. So, bygones be bygones. I guess no bridges ever really burned in professional sports. But if he can contribute for him, good for him. I don't think he's going to be expected to go in there and light the world on fire. But if they think he can help, Wally Buono knows what he's doing. So I'm not going to sit here and question Wally at all. The next guy up on the list, we get to talk about our old friend Henry Burris calling out the Ottawa Redblacks. This is just, I don't want to say I'm surprised because I'm not, but here's what Burris had to say. He sent out a couple of tweets Sunday saying, you can't take the leadership of a team away and expect the same results. This is not the same Redblacks team from the last 2 years. I'm happily retired, but look at all the names that led and made plays for us and get us into and win the Grey Cup. They're not here anymore. He's talking about himself, right?
Yeah, probably 90% about himself, I'd have to say. Just knowing his past and his ego that he has, he's mostly talking about himself. Now, there's players in there that have left, big-time players that contributed a lot to that Grey Cup victory, like Ernest Jackson and some of the receivers. And I'm sure there's some other players out there that I can't think of right now, but for the most part, I think old Hank's talking about himself.
Well, yeah, they lost Ernest Jackson. They lost Chris Williams, who wasn't there for the stretch drive to the Grey Cup last year. He was hurt, torn ACL. Mm-hmm. Abdul Kinney's gone. Tomaso Munoz, Moten Hopkins. Like, they have lost some veteran players, sure. But Hank is talking about Hank, and Hank is always talking about Hank. And this is typical of him. His name hasn't been out there. Ottawa's struggling. He's looking for that validation that he craves. You should have seen some of the comments on the tweets. They were, please come back. Your team needs you. We need you. We miss you. All that stuff. It's the same ego boost stuff that I think he always looks for. He showed up at Red Black's practice today. He's making it about himself. And again, you're going to have players and coaches having to be interviewed about what Hank said. And do you agree with what Hank said and all this stuff? And it's a distraction. And it's one of those things where it doesn't surprise me because of who Hank is. But the thing that's kind of bothering me is this is exactly the same Red Blacks team as last year. Are we forgetting that this team went under 500 and just got hot at the right time? And by the right time, I mean in the Grey Cup, because they didn't look particularly good near the end of the season. The Ticats went into Ottawa, I think it was the second or third last week of the season, and beat them. So it's not like the Red Blacks went on this run like the Eskimos had. The Eskimos won, I think, six of their last seven games last year. They've run off six. Like, that's a team that gets hot. Red Blacks just kind of they got lucky to be in the East Division, so they got they won the division under 500, got the first round bye, got an Edmonton team coming in on us in inclement weather where they played the week before in Hamilton, played a tough game. Like, yes, they got to the Grey Cup, they won it, full credit to that. But this was not a good football team last year, so I don't understand why people are surprised that they're not a good football team this year. They lost good players like Ernest Jackson, like Chris Williams, like Abdul Kane. Why would anyone expect them to be better?
The record is 1-5-1, and that's the record. That's who they are. But I don't think you plug in Hank and all of a sudden they're winning games left, right, and center. I think that Trevor Harris has been playing pretty well. I think the offense has been playing. You know, they've been a lot of close games, and it still can be turned around. And like you said, they're 8-9-1. They could be 8-9-1. They could be, you know, even better than that this year. So for Hank to say that is kind of silly to me. I mean, it's just another distraction for the team that is, the record shows that they are struggling at this point.
Harris is second in the league in yards. He's tops in the league in touchdown passes. And he, I believe, is the second or third highest rated quarterback out of guys who have started multiple games. So it's not like quarterback's been an issue here. So I understand what he means. Yeah, they lost a lot of guys in the offseason, locker room guys, but this is what happens with teams that win championships. Teams that win championships get gutted. Coaching staff gets gutted. Guys become head coaches or move on to other places. Players leave. This happens to every single championship team. But I go back to Ottawa was not that good last year. And yes, they've lost a lot of close games. They're missing that one something, that one gear that they got last year, especially at the end, because yes, they're in close games. Yes, they're close losses, but they're still losses. This is a 1-5-1 football team. They are one lucky win over, I believe it was Montreal, away from being essentially in the same boat as Hamilton. And if this team was 0-6-1, we're having a much different conversation, but for some reason they get that one win and their fans are sitting there going, oh no, but we'll turn it around because we won the Grey Cup last year. They're just as bad as Hamilton, essentially. I know that they've won close games and Hamilton's getting blown out, but I don't want to hear that the Red Blacks are any better than their record, because they're not. If they were, they'd have a better record, period.
Yeah, good teams find ways to win games, and they're finding ways to lose games, just like the Tiger Cats. Not as close, as you said. There's been some blowouts there, but there's been some close games with the Tiger Cats as well. So I'm not saying that Hamilton's a better team than Ottawa, but it's in reality, you look at the records, they're not that far off. And who would have thought that Hamilton and Ottawa would be at the bottom of these standings at this point of the season?
No one's going to care about how many close losses Ottawa has if they finish with four wins, and no one's going to care if they're better or worse than the Ticats if the Ticats finish. You know what I mean? Like, if they finish 4-13-1, no one's going to give a crap. They lost their games by a combined 27 points. Doesn't matter. No one's going to care.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't matter. So anyway, no Bozo this week. We couldn't really find one, so we're deciding not to hand one out. So let's go straight into this week's game preview. Let's tee up this game the Ticats have against the Winnipeg Blue Bombers at Tim Hortons Field on Saturday night. This might be the first game since maybe week three against the Riders, and it might be the first game since week one against the Argos that I would dub as winnable. I feel like the Ticats can win this game. This is the first home game in a three-game homestand that I think will kind of define this team's season. Yes, Winnipeg is 4-2, very good football team, but the Ticats now have three straight at home. They play this one, they play the Red Blacks week after that, then they get a bye week, then they play the Argos on Labor Day. I think this stretch is going to tell us what this team is. If they can win these three games, they can be 3-6 after Labor Day, going in the second half of the season. I think we're having a much different conversation post-Labor Day. The Bombers are coming into this game flying high off those two last play wins in their last two games. They've been playing really well. They are basically the inverse of the Red Blacks that we just talked about. They're finding ways to win at the end of games as opposed to finding ways to lose. They're playing really well. They're getting solid quarterback play from Matt Nichols. Their defense is still finding ways to create turnovers. But much like last week when I said if we got to hang our hat on something with the Ticats, and I said they were, I think, 3-1 in Edmonton under Ken Austin. Here's the hang your hat on, unimportant, mean nothing stat this week. Zach Collaros has never lost against the Winnipeg Blue Bombers as the Ticats' starting quarterback. So let's keep that going. Ticats can get their first win this week, and I think we'll be in good shape going forward.
Let's hope so. You didn't mention my favorite player, Andrew Harris. He's doing really well this year. He's really impressing me, actually. So he's going to be a big factor in this game as well if they can shut him down or at least slow him down.
Oh, I got some Andrew Harris. When I talk about what the defense needs to do, Andrew Harris plays a very big role in that. So, Mike, do you have any sort of offensive keys to this game? Anything you're looking for? Anything you're hoping for? Is it same old? Got to keep Claros healthy. Got to keep him upright. Yeah. It's the same stuff, right?
It is. It's all about the offensive line. He didn't have time last week, and he still produced. If they give him a little bit of time, please, he will produce. This team will produce. The offense will march down the field and score points. So we've seen that the receivers are talented. We know that we have running backs that can make plays, but they never use them. But it's all about the offensive line to me. Just give him some time, and we will be okay. And I'm hoping that, you know, Tony Washington's in. I'm not sure how quickly that transition can be made from a different team to the Ticats. And I'm not sure about Fulton's injury. But if those guys are both back, that would be huge for this team.
All right. I can't disagree with that. So I'll just jump right into the defensive stuff. I got 3 points here that I think are things that we have to look at. It's not going to be easy for the secondary in this one, Mike. Winnipeg has a lot of weapons on offense, but the big guy in my mind, the one that I think they really have to key in on, is Darvin Adams. Clarence Denmark's still lurking around there, but no Weston Dressler. I don't think he's going to play in this game. Adams becomes the guy the Ticats need to focus on in the receiving core. Now we move into Andrew Harris, because this is a guy that the Ticats cannot allow Harris to get going. He is remarkably the team's third leading receiver, and he leads the league in yards after the catch. So they really have to find a way, if Harris is going to get involved, to limit his ability to pick up yards after he catches the football. He's also the league's fifth leading rusher, and he's found the end zone 4 times in 6 games. So he is playing very, very well. The Ticats are really going to have to key in on him. And I think this goes without saying, but we're going to say it anyway. Constantly, much like talking about the offensive line, I got to talk about pressure. The Ticats have got to get pressure. If trends hold, Matt Nichols is probably going to throw for over 300 yards. I think that I've come to terms with the fact that he's going to toss over 300 yards. But even if he does that, he has shown a tendency to make some really bad throws, throw some really bad interceptions, especially late in games. So if the Ticats can somehow get to Nichols, force him into those bad throws, perhaps the turnovers will come. And if the turnovers come, Ticats might finally find the win column for the first time in 2017. Get that goose egg off their back, and then we go into hopefully what will be a much better second half of this season.
Yeah, just got to get the ball rolling. And I believe that Weston Dressler's on the sixth game. So
is he on the sixth game? That's what I thought. I didn't think he was going to play.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and it's the same thing with the other way for the offense. We all know that the Winnipeg defense creates turnovers, a lot of turnovers. So don't turn over the ball. That's another thing for the offense.
Yeah, no, like Winnipeg's a really solid team, both defensively and offensively. They don't like wow you in any one area, but they're just solid all the way around. They're a good football team, and this is not going to be easy for the Ticats, but they're at home. This feels like a game that the Ticats, even at 0-6, should win. And I think if they can get that first win, I think you build momentum. You come home 6 days late. You stay home, get another game 6 days later against a division rival. I think this, like I said, this is going to be the stretch of games here. These next three games are going to tell us everything we need to know about the Hamilton Ticats team. If they go into Labor Day or exit Labor Day with 1 or 0 wins, this season is over. But they in these next three games, they have a real chance to salvage their season because right now three wins leads this division. So it's possible that post-Labor Day, they could come out of here with three wins and be right back in the hunt for the division title. And if you, anyone would have said that after last week's game over the Stamps, people would have called you crazy. But the possibility is there. They need to take advantage of these three games. They need to make Tim Hortons Field a place for opposing teams to fear. They need to get this win. This is it's not a must win, but it's a have to win. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And watch out for those trick plays. Watch out for those trick plays because those Bombers are tricky. They're tricky.
They are indeed. They are indeed. So, okay, Mike, let's close the show. We got no questions this week, but we do have to make our picks. So let's get to those. Thursday night, week opens in our nation's capital. The undefeated Edmonton Eskimos travel all the way to Ottawa to take on the 1-5-1 Ottawa Red Blacks. Mike, who do you have in this one?
I'm going bold. Can you feel it? I'm going bold. I'm going to take that. The Eskimos can't go 18-0. They're going to lose eventually. Ottawa's been in a lot of close games. I'm going to take Ottawa, even though I don't want them to win.
I am also going to take Ottawa. This is a short week for the Eskimos. They are beat up. The narrative is going to be if they win, oh, Hank called them out and look how they played. Yes, the close losses mean jack, but they have been close losses. Edmonton's won a lot of close games and got the win. I feel like Ottawa, this is their chance. They haven't won at home, and their home record the last year and a half has been awful. I think this is the one where they get that home W, send the fans happy, maybe get the ball rolling for them before a very crucial meeting with the Ticats a week later. But, yeah, I got the Red Blacks in this one as well. Friday night, a battle for first place in the CFL East Division. The Toronto Argonauts travel to Montreal to take on the Alouettes. Mike, who do you like in this one?
I got to go with the Alouettes just because of the uncertainty around Ricky Ray. Now, someone could come in and maybe one of their backups is can really spark this team, but I'm not sure that Montreal's at home. Durant's going to be starting. I'm going to go with Montreal.
Al's at home, coming off a bye, unsure about how healthy Ray is. Even if he plays, how many hits is he away from sitting on the sideline again? You got to take the Owls in this one for me. Saturday night, here in the Hammer, Winnipeg Blue Bombers come to town, face the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Mike, who do you like?
I'm going with the Tiger Cats. I said it last week, they have to start winning, but come on. Let's get on the trolley and get that first win. I have no reasons why they're going to win. I just hope they are, so I will pick them to win.
Same here. They have to win this game to me. This is... They're back at home. They played so well against Edmonton. That was that, like, if the football gods were kind to us, the Ticats would have two wins right now. But because we're Ticat fans, we're the Sisyphus of CFL fans, we're meant to just climb up the hill and the boulder rolls back down. But I think this is the game that they're finally going to get off the schneid. I got the Ticats in this one, too. Finally, Sunday. We get some Sunday night football, CFL style. The week closes in Saskatchewan with a rematch from last week. The BC Lions head to that beautiful new stadium in Regina to take on the Rough Riders. Mike, who do you like in this one?
BC's just too loaded. Williams is back now, and Lule's leading that offense, and Jennings might be back next week. I'm not sure, but you have to take the better team. I think I picked Saskatchewan last week. I was wrong. I'm going to correct my mistake and pick the Lions this week.
It's tough to beat a team 2 weeks in a row. However, when the teams are this far apart, BC is just a hair to me below Edmonton and Calgary, and Saskatchewan is down there to me with Ottawa and Hamilton. So the disparity between these two teams is just so large. This could be the upset of the week. I will cop to that. There, it wouldn't surprise me if Saskatchewan put it all together and got the win, but I'm not going to take the Riders because you just can't. BC is just better. You look at that offense especially, and they are just absolutely loaded. So give me the Lions as well. I think, if I'm not mistaken, that means you and I picked all the same games this week. That's a rare occurrence.
Yeah, very rare, very rare. I haven't been checking the standings though. I guess I'm not really in a league in the Pick'em. I'm in the CFL podcast league in fantasy. I think I'm around 60th place. You know, not doing too great, but Well, what place are you in there, Josh?
I don't know because I forgot about 3 weeks ago to put my picks in on Pick'em.
Oh, are you silly?
And then I was like, oh, I forgot to do it. Okay, I'll remember next week. And then I forgot again. I don't think I put picks. Man. I don't think I put picks in for almost a month. But I believe on we do picks for three down, and I'm in. I know I'm in last there, but I think I'm something at like 15. I can't remember. It everyone who picks games for three down is above 500, which I think is kind of impressive. But I do know that I am last in picks there. But hopefully I can get some W's this week and move on up in those standings.
Well, what about the Fantasy League?
Fantasy League, I also forgot to put a fantasy team in a few weeks ago. Like, I don't know what it was. I think it was one Thursday game. It might have been the week that the Ticats played at home against Edmonton. Because that was the week that Ottawa played twice. So it was the week after. Who did Hamilton play after? They played Calgary. So it was that week. For some reason, I just completely forgot to put a I don't know why. I think about it, and then I was like, oh, I'll do it later. Oh, I'll do it later. And then the week starts, I'm thinking, oh, okay. Oh, yeah. And I was one week, I was like, oh, yeah, I got Greg Ellingson. And then I went to look at it. I was like, oh, I didn't put a team in. I'm such an idiot. So, yeah, it slipped my mind. And now I'm so far out of it that I don't think I'm going to do it for this year. But maybe I'll get back into it. And I've gave everyone a chance to get so far ahead of me. Then I'll start making my comeback. I will be the Hamilton Tiger Cats of Pick'em and Fantasy. Start at the bottom and move all the way back up to the top.
So, yeah, Ticats are going to finish 12-6. So
hey, you heard it here first, folks. All right, that's it for this week, Mike. That's the show. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher, or listen to it at 3downnation.com. You want to ask us a question, didn't get any this week. I believe you said before the show, Adam was a little busy this week, so we didn't get a chance to throw in his great questions, but I'm sure they'll be back next week. But if you want to hit us up, throw us a question our way, you can always find us on Twitter. Mike, your Twitter handle as always, please.
Mike_Ticats.
And you can find me at JoshSmith_82. And you can always post those questions in the comment section of 3downNation. Or you can fire us off an email, podsky@gmail.com. So that was episode 83, the Andy Fan 2's episode of Podsky Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.